This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
All right, here we go. Ash Wednesday, Mardi Gras over, and it's amazing how what with what happened on January 1st, unfortunately, and then, you know, we had the Super Bowl we were all excited about, then a long carnival season. All of a sudden, it's March 5th, and we're approaching the end of the first quarter of the year already. Right now, it's 53 degrees, windy outside. It's going to be windy for most of the day today. I don't think as bad as it was yesterday. Highs of 63. Tomorrow, cooler. Highs of 61. Friday, 75. Nice. Saturday, chance for showers, I think, in advance of another front. Highs of 73. Then Sunday, as some parades are scheduled, 65 for a high and cloudy. And then pretty well springtime, 68, 72, 72, 78 by next Thursday. Glade Bilby joins us now, president of French Quarter Citizens. How you doing, Glade?
I'm doing fine. Good morning.
It's been an active first quarter for the French Quarter so far.
Boy, it certainly has. Everyone knows lots of things have happened here, culminating, I guess, yesterday.
Yeah,
give me
your thoughts. I mean, obviously, the terror attack was terrible, but since then, the reaction, police presence, quality of life, et cetera. Give me a state of the French Quarter, if you will.
Well, I think we're in pretty good shape. There's been certainly a focus on the French Quarter because what happened, unfortunately, on the 1st. But there's been a tremendous cooperation between NOPD, the federal offices, the state police. It's resulted in a very safe place down here in the French Quarter. I've got to tell you that. Maybe some of the optics with National Guard, with long rifles and things at corners was not what people would have wanted, but it certainly helped people feel safer, that's for sure.
How was the crowd for Super Bowl, first of all, in terms of behavior? And because it is a neighborhood as well as the cash register of the city.
It is. We talk about the neighborhood aspect of where I live quite often. But there were a lot of crowds, and I tell you what, it was impactful, but in a different sort of way, because most of the events that happened were corporate events. They were special, off-site, invitation-only type of things. And I have a feeling that most of the people came in town didn't have the opportunity to come to a lot of the businesses and restaurants. And I've heard that anecdotally from a number of people that own businesses. They didn't have the business that they thought they might have from Super Bowl. And it's because there were so many special events that people had to go to.
Say that's interesting to me. Was it based on location or type of business, Glade?
Well, just think about it. Here, the French Quarter is close enough to make the Dome a very good place to have an event because you can walk around CBD. But there were tents everywhere. The governor had a giant tent at the Whale parking lot over there near the Hilton. And I think people had places to go to that occupied their time from morning till night, till the game, and then after the game, and then that was that. They could leave town. So I don't think you were a normal tourist, let's just say, where you'd come in and go eat at a restaurant and go stroll around Charters or Royal Street and go a particular place in the quarter. You were going to a particular event in a place somewhere, maybe in a hotel, maybe at Brennan's or La Trobe or one of the places that were rented. For instance, Arno's, the entire restaurant was rented to use for the NFL. So they did business, of course, but not the way you would think you'd come in as a tourist and let's go to Arno's. That didn't happen.
What about the after the terrorist attack, the restrictions that were put on traffic on Bourbon Street? Somebody told me anecdotally that I think they were in a quarter on Saturday and they saw a van going down Bourbon Street. I think it was Bourbon Street by Lafitte Square with a car full of people within traffic. Did they follow through on what they said they were going to do or not?
Well, they were pretty much closed off as a box. I mean, a lot of residents had passes to be able to get to their house if they lived within the box, which was pretty much Royal, St. Anne, Bourbon, Dauphine, all the way to Canal Street. So there may have been some things that happened that I'm not aware of, but by and large, they were pretty tight with that. And that leads to another discussion, because they're going to have to do something about traffic because it gridlocks very easily down North Peters, Decatur, certainly Esplanade. There's only so many ways you can get in and out of here. And so maybe you just don't want people cruising around unless you have somewhere to go or something to do, because it is difficult with the narrow streets to have any kind of traffic safety, certainly. So I think an overall traffic plan needs to be maybe in place for special events.
Are you talking about generally or just for special events?
I think generally you need to take a look at it, but certainly when you have special events, for instance, French Quarter Festival, we have 900,000 mm-hmm. people come to the French Quarter, so it's as impactful as anything else. You're not going to have Mardi Gras because Mardi Gras is all the way uptown and CBD, mm-hmm. and it's much larger than just the French Quarter. But French Quarter Fest is really intensive in just this little area, geographic area.
Having been, I think that when it comes to security concerns, because of the way people are packed in, I think French Quarter Fest is a bigger security concern than was either Mardi Gras or the Super Bowl. Thoughts, Glade?
Well, yes, and they're considering it. In fact, the entire plan is to consider anything that impacts the French Quarter with a lot of people, and that certainly is one of them. And you have a more than usual number of tourists here the weekends of Jazz Fest as well. So anytime when you're going to have a larger than normal number of people, you're going to have to consider that. Now, don't forget, we have 19 million people that come to the French Quarter, to the city of New Orleans, and by and large, the French Quarter every year. So that's 1.5 million a month. So you really have to think this through. It's certainly special events, but on a day-to-day level, you're going to have to come up with some sort of plan that makes things flow better, easier.
Now, just to be clear, Glade, are you talking about in light of the enhanced security or just in general?
Well, I think both. I think the enhanced security could come in for the special event occasions, and then in general, you need something to make it easier. We've been having a giant problem with people on it parking on the neutral ground, so you need to think about where is everybody going to park if you come into the French Quarter. You fill up certain lots, but then people can't park everywhere, and we've had a problem and an issue with people parking on corners, and you know you can't have a fire truck make the corner if all four corners are blocked with vehicles. So there's a lot of things to think about, and enforcement is one of them.
All right, let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back. Got some traffic problems on I-12, as I understand it. Helicopters being dispatched. We'll look into it now. And then more with Glade Bilby as we talk about the French Quarter here on WWL. 720 traffic. 7:25, Ash Wednesday morning. Tommy Tucker here with Glade Bilby, president of French Quarter Citizens. What's Ash Wednesday like in a French Quarter, Glade? I'm just curious.
Relaxed, quiet.
Yeah.
Everybody's kind of late morning.
What kind of job did they do cleaning up?
Fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. I'm glad you brought that up because Ivy Waste and Sydney Torres' company is doing a great job in the French Quarter. Certainly, they have before when they had the contract, but I just saw some shots on television of Bourbon Street, and it's spotless this morning, and that never really happened. So I hats off to Sydney and his group, Ivy Waste, because it's a marked improvement in the quarter.
Look, I don't know Sydney Torres other than speaking to him a couple of times on the phone. Never met him in person. I don't have any interest in his company. I don't know anything about public bid laws, but it seems to me, Glade, common sense dictates he's proven he can get it done. He does it done. It gets it done in an exemplary fashion. And I had this conversation with Billy Nungesser the other day. It would seem as though we got a problem. We got a solution. Why make it any more complicated? Thoughts?
Bureaucracy. That's my thought on that, because I think that always makes it more complicated. Of course, it comes down to money. Mm-hmm. But when you think about the money that the French Quarter generates for the city and the state, doing a great job is worth a few extra $1 million, maybe. Mm-hmm. And I think that was the case in this one. Of course, there were some issues with the contract, notwithstanding. But we know Sydney did a good job before when he had the contract, so we're seeing he can do it again, and that's great. And I think this should be the effectiveness of every contract should be what people need to see before the money's given out.
So what happens now with where the French Quarter goes from here, with French Quarter Fest coming up? Who has a seat at the table? Who talks about what happens with security and, like you said, traffic and parking and quality of life regulations and those kind of things?
Well, I think everybody does. Now that there's a federal response here, that they're certainly going to talk about it. I've brought a lot of resources here. State Police, Troop NOLA, and Superintendent Kirkpatrick with the top brass at NOPD, they all know the issues. Now it's figuring out a way to make things work for the number of people that live here. If it was just the residents, it wouldn't be a problem. Mm-hmm. But as I said before, 19 million people coming in, you do need to do that. And if you're going to ask people to come here and drink, you have to pay attention to the activities and how they get around and the logistics of it. So I think it's a lot of people that are putting their heads together to try to work this out, that's for sure. And they're asking the residents' involvement. Everybody's being involved and raising their hand and having their two cents. So that's a good part.
Crime in a quarter and going back to the everyday quality of life enforcements?
Well, it's down. Look at the numbers. I mean, we send out the Metropolitan Crime Commission numbers. It's down. I quite often go to the MACS meetings at the 8th District, which encompasses the French Quarter. All sorts of crime is down in the French Quarter. I think it's because of proactive patrolling. It's not reactive. Certainly, the French Quarter Management District and the Supplemental Police Patrol, the little blue lights that you see, those have been very effective. Their response time is down to under 2 minutes. So I think all of this is adding up. The increased, let's just say, eyeballs on the illegal things that are going on. They don't just let them skirt like they used to. So I think it's all having a positive effect in the French Quarter. That and keeping the place clean and trying to follow some of the zoning laws. It's we're in better shape than we've been in a while. I'll tell you that.
I'm going to tell you what, I'm going to leave it at that, Glade. Let's leave it at good news and everybody's happy.
Perfect.
Thank you, sir. You bet. Have a nice Lent, I guess. I don't know what I should say. Glade Bilby, president of French Quarters Citizens. We come back, we're going to talk to Stephanie Regal, business writer for the Times-Picayune. NOLA.com, the Archdiocese is selling properties and planning for a smaller church as their bankruptcy case drags on. I think when we say smaller church, we're talking about smaller diocese there with maybe less churches. We'll talk about all that with Stephanie Regal. We'll talk to Ronald Surpass after that. Professor of Practice, Department of Criminal Justice, take a deep dive into crime and take a review of security and Mardi Gras and so forth. Look ahead to French Quarter Festival. We'll talk with Freddie King, who represents the French Quarter, about security measures and the French Quarter Fest coming up, because that's the next thing. We're also going to talk to J.P. Morrell, New Orleans City Council member, about maybe we discovered some better ways to do Mardi Gras yesterday. Right now, time for WWL First News. For that, we go to Dave Cohen. It is currently 7:44, 16 till 8 on this Ash Wednesday. Maybe I should speak a little lower.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
The PGA Tour is all systems go, and so is the new show, Early Wedge, on the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Sportsline experts Sia Nejad, Mike McClure, and Eric Cohen, alongside myself, Rick Gaiman, Patrick McDonald, and Jason Sobel. 5 times per week, the Early Wedge provides the best information for DFS lineups, outright selections, and so much more. Follow and listen to Early Wedge in the Early Edge feed on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Since it's Ashlands Wednesday, in case you're waking up with a big head, a little bit windy today, not as windy as it was yesterday, and the wind did eventually come in. Highs today, about 65 degrees. Right now it's 54. With the wind, it feels like 47, so be aware of that. 61 for a high tomorrow, 75 Friday, chance for showers Saturday, highs of 74, and then Sunday, highs of 65 and clouds as some more parades are scheduled to roll. I think the crew of Barkus and Trucks, if I heard correctly. Stephanie Regal joins us now, business writer for the Times-Picayune, NewOrleans.NOLA.com. Rather. Good morning, Stephanie. How are you?
Fine, thanks. Good morning.
You know, I'm a big fan of yours as a journalist. I think you do a great job and always have. Let's talk about what I think. Let me say my piece, and then you can comment on this because you're the reporter.
Sure.
And you stick with the facts. I think what's going on here with the Archdiocese, just to set the context, and not just the Archdiocese, but the Catholic Church in general, is just as they separate Entergy Louisiana or Entergy New Orleans from the main company to insulate assets, I think the church is doing the same thing with archdioceses here to insulate the church's assets. The difference is one's a religion, the other's big business, or maybe they're the same, because when I see the legal maneuverings here, there's just my outsider's opinion. I'm no Stephanie Regal, but it's reminiscent of something you'd see in Succession to protect assets and shield assets. While maybe appropriate to protect the stockholders when it comes to religion, and this is a judgment on my part, not yours, maybe not so appropriate. But with that being the backdrop, let's talk about what's going on in the Archdiocese.
Yeah, we took a look recently. It was really more sort of a big picture analysis, just to take a step back, as we are now rapidly approaching the 5-year anniversary of this bankruptcy case that was prompted by dozens of claims of, you know, previous clergy sex abuse. Now we know there are hundreds of claims against 300 plus priests, deacons, nuns, most of them dead, not all though. And so, you know, just as the church has tried to settle this case with the plaintiffs, and they were, you know, last fall, hundreds of millions of dollars apart in what they wanted. There's some reason to think that they are closing the gap, but we're still months away at best from settling this case. And so, you know, in the meantime, we took a look at all of the real estate that the church has sold off and the different assets that they have sort of divested themselves of or are in the process of so doing, as you mentioned. And it's, you know, I mean, it's something that's going on around the country. It's something that probably would not have happened in this way had it not been for this clergy sex abuse crisis that has, you know, been handled through the bankruptcy courts by and large around the country. And it's due to a number of factors. I mean, the world is changing. The Catholic Church is shrinking, even though there are pockets of like renewed devout communities that are growing. But, you know, over the past, say, 3.5-4 years, as the church has moved to liquidate some of these assets, it has sold off nearly, I think, $15+ million or so of real estate, including like a big office building downtown, community centers, a couple of old church and school building on Napoleon Avenue that's now going to be a Trader Joe's and an event venue. There's also talk that has been predicated really by a controversy that came to light with the food bank Second Harvest, that the Archbishop has said he is looking to remove himself as the sole corporate member of of that nonprofit, as well as another very important charitable nonprofit that the church has basically run and controlled, Christopher Homes, which provides housing to low-income seniors. So, you know, we just sort of see this movement away from having as large a footprint. And then, of course, separate and apart from the bankruptcy, going back even to the post-Katrina years, the archdiocese here had closed parishes where they just literally didn't have enough parishioners anymore. You know, a lot of these churches were built in the 19th century or the very early 20th century. They have a tremendous, you know, cost to insure and to maintain. And there's just not the money, and there's not the people to do it anymore. And so, you know, that's an added financial pressure in addition to everything that's going on in an attempt to settle the bankruptcy court. So I think in the fall of 23, it was, they shuttered about 10% of their parishes. The archbishop had said they would close more in 2024, and that hasn't happened yet. I think they've just been putting out so many dumpster fires that they decided to put that on hold. But it's probably inevitable at some point that they close or consolidate parishes to you know, have vibrant parishes where the people are and not so much where the people aren't. What's interesting, I think, is that a lot of these parishes and church properties, they're wonderful old buildings, and of course there's so much sentimental value to them, and they hold such a special place in the community. But as a practical matter, you know, you're not going to get the insured replacement value for a giant hulking church building that's fallen apart in a disinvested neighborhood, and that's just the reality. So
where's the bolt of lightning when you need it, huh?
Exactly, right? So you can say, oh, we'll give $10 million, $20, $30 million for this old church, even though that might be the insured replacement value on paper. So it looks like the church has a lot more real estate in terms of, you know, its dollar value than it actually does on the market, especially if you try to sell it all off at once.
I thought, Stephanie, I thought you'd appreciate that. Where's the bolt of lightning when you need it? So, well, let me take a break.
Right,
we'll pick it up when we come back. All right, 751, 9 till 8, traffic now, WWL. 757 now, 3 till 8, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Stephanie Regal, business writer for the Times-Picayune, NOLA.com, about the Archdiocese and the plans to consolidate properties, sell off properties, consolidate churches. Dealing with the bankruptcy case, but actually it goes before that to Katrina, and it does go really to the way they've conducted business around the country. And I would just say this before I get back to Stephanie, because I don't want to bring her into this melee, but I think the question is whether it's a religion or whether it's a business. For example, if Target decides to close stores because they're not profitable, well, then people can choose to go to other Targets or shop somewhere else. But with a religion, it's kind of different, because what comes first, right? Do you provide the facility first or the services first, or did you base it on demand? And when it comes to businesses, there's a board that runs this and decides this, and you're dealing with assets and capitalization. And Stephanie Regal, when it comes to, and let me say one more thing, Stephanie, before you come on, and that is that 97% or 93%, I think it is, of the priests are good working servant people that are not involved in this. However, you do have to answer for what you did wrong as a church with the archdiocese and a Catholic church. Now, all that being said, Stephanie, when it comes to a board and capitalization, who runs the church? What are the assets of the Roman Catholic Church? And they do separate it by archdiocese to shield those assets, do they not?
They do. And the archdiocese is, I mean, they control a lot. And the archbishop is the sole corporate member of all of the 100+ quote affiliates, or, you know, affiliated nonprofits, and most of the parishes that are under this massive umbrella of the archdiocese. And I mean, what you've seen in the bankruptcy and also in recent skirmishes and controversies, like over this fight over the leadership of the Second Harvest Food Bank, which got a lot of publicity a couple of weeks back, is kind of where civil law and canon or church law butt heads. Mm-hmm. And if it was easy to untangle this mess of spaghetti, you wouldn't have high-priced lawyers, and you wouldn't have a nearly 5-year bankruptcy case. You know, It's just, it's all mixed up.
I don't know if you want to answer this question or not, but let me ask you.
Probably not.
Okay, but if the Roman Catholic Church wanted to just settle this all, they could easily sell a tapestry or two or some of the artworks or do whatever they had to do to make this all go away. Could they not? They have the assets to do that?
Well, I mean, they could settle it. The problem is they want to be a going concern, you know, and so it's not that easy. Maybe somebody could write a big check.
Maybe you can come back.